Well, we got no intro music tonight. I think Blog
Talk's
all screwed
like.
Up. Blog Talk's all screwed up. Here, I'll do it myself then.
Oh, there it goes.
This is Haunted America with your hosts, Josh Mantello and Al Shepard on Blog Talk Radio. To discuss today's topics, call 646-716-5896. And now, Haunted America with Josh Mantello and Al Shepard.
Edition of Haunted America Radio, the bipolar paranormal team. Josh, what do we got? What do you got up your sleeve this week?
Oh, I got lots of things up my sleeve this week. First, I just want to let everybody know I spoke with Steve earlier. Reverend Steve Wilson earlier, who was supposed to be our guest tonight. He was unable to make it. He got called away to investigations with case down at a castle in Rhode Island. So he is there and unable to make it. He's going to get in touch with me over the week and let me know when he can make it. Tonight, I had two things up my sleeve. One I know is a little bit more near and dear to your heart, Al, because you always seem to bring up on me, but we've never really covered completely as EVPs. I think we've touched on them here and there, but I don't think we've ever actually and definitely discussed them on any given episode. I think we've just brought them up, touched on them, but never completely talked about them and how to do it and kind of the step-by-step process like we did with the pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
That's a subject that I like talking about because I think it's one of the easiest things for anyone to do. Anyone can go out and get a voice recorder, start doing EVPs, so, but it's still a matter of doing them right, you know, right way and a wrong way. And, well, I don't know if there's any wrong way, but a better way, you know.
And then, secondly, if we still have time, this is a topic I've always wanted to kind of get to, and we haven't gotten around to, and it's probably the last paranormal topic we haven't discussed yet, is that of ufology, the study of UFOs and close encounters and anything along those fun lines. I mean, we've covered psychics, we've covered ghost investigations, we've covered remote viewing and all that other happy stuff, but I think this is probably the last of the paranormal topics we haven't touched on yet, and in itself is probably even bigger of a following than the paranormal investigating and ghost hunting topics that we've talked about. This stuff's been around since ancient times, and has always been around. It's always sparked an interest in people, and it also has probably just as many skeptics and believers and disbelievers that as the ghost and paranormal investigating field has. I guess when you say paranormal investigating, you could cover ufology in it, so I'd say the ghost people, hardcore religious skeptics, you know, say, you know, God created Earth and only Earth, and they also say, you know, you go to heaven or you go to hell and you don't sit in between. So I think that this is just as good of a topic as any, and we really, before I ever really had much of an interest in the spirits and afterlife life on other planets and all that other stuff. So I think it's a topic well worth hitting, and I'm sure we will hit again and again as over the course of our time doing Haunted America Radio.
I know one other topic, you know, one other subject, part of the probably the biggest paranormal thing that we haven't talked about is politology. So we'll have to schedule that sometime.
You lost me on that one.
Yeah, it's the study of politicians.
When will I learn not to take you so seriously?
I suck you in every time. But yeah, you can't get much more paranormal than today's politicians.
I suppose, and you know, we'll probably end up doing our jumping all around bipolar radio now. I wanted to start with EVP, but you're sucking me into this conversation now. you can't talk about ufology and not really talk about politics in some way. Just like you really can't talk about paranormal. I've got to stop saying paranormal investigations, ghost hunting, and spirit stuff without sometimes bringing in history and religion. You can't have an in-depth conversation about ufology and life on other planets without talking about politics and what they know, what they don't know, what they claim to know, and what they claim to don't know, and what they actually know, and you know, your Area 51 stuff and all that. So those two definitely go hand in hand.
Definitely. I mean, the black helicopters and you know, mysterious disappearances of people that know things and, you know, changing their stories within 24 hours and all kinds of stuff like that.
Right. And I can say that it is a field that is growing more and more accepted, just as the ghost hunters is getting more accepted, to the point now, and this is what really kind of made me want to bring it up today, and is that governments now are starting to realize that they can't hide this anymore, that there is something out there and there is stuff going on, and they need to just pony up and deal with it. Recently, the United Kingdom, just this past week, released out of their top secret files, I guess you would call them, over 4,000 pages worth of reports on UFO sightings and the government's research into them. They've been made public and put into the United Kingdom's National Archives. Now, you can't expect a whole lot when you start talking about governments and releasing this type of stuff. It's going to be a long time from now before we ever get any paperwork saying that they absolutely, positively have captured, shot down, videotaped, made communication with a extraterrestrial life form. But these papers here show 800 alleged encounters between the 80s and the 90s of this century. Just like any other government form that you would expect, they do kind of debunk off a lot of stuff. But at the same time, it does, you know, let you know these governments are starting to open up. There's been such a high demand for them. The United States hasn't really gone that far. I can tell you, you know, that there are plenty of people in the ufology field that, you know, are filing Freedom of Information Act stuff all the time to get this kind of stuff released. And I think before I kind of get any further, ufology itself, I mean, when we start talking about the paranormal, we're talking about, you know, extraterrestrial life on other planets visiting us type of thing, when it really comes into the realm of the paranormal. A UFO, and especially when documented in some of these things that the UK released, and anybody, you know, who's in, you know, who's interested, you can go to CNN. You know, this has been broadcast on CNN. It's on CNN.com. Google search UK UFO press release. You know, it's all right there. All these files are even available on the internet for you to look at. But UFO is anything that's just simply an unidentified flying object. And I think that's kind of what the UK was getting to with a lot of these. And some of these are even documents of, you know, shot down secret U.S. spy craft in the 50s. And I think a lot of times when we talk about UFOs, this is what people might be seeing. Secret spy planes, you know, weird stuff that the government's working on and black ops. You know, I think probably one of the best examples is, you know, for how long back in the early 90s did you hear about people seeing strange black triangles flying through the sky, and not too long after, the government releases the B-2 stealth bomber, which was completely built, tested, and done in secrecy, and then just kind of revealed, you know, fully operational. It's not like the jets now, you know, jets that they're building now, a lot of them they're done in the public, you know, this here was specifically built in secret, tested in secret. So, and it's a black triangle that flies. People who would have seen it maybe before it had been released and shown to the public, now at that time would have thought it was, you know, it might have been some sort of extraterrestrial craft along those lines, where now they would know that it's a stealth fighter or stealth bomber.
I would think that for every plane they're building in the public eye, they're probably building two more in secret, because they're not going to get. I mean, if they're smart, they're not going to give away their hand like that. So it's almost like divert their attention type of thing.
Oh, that's true. I'm sure there's plenty of stuff in development that we're not going to see for 20 years, yet they're working on it. You can still now, you can see videos, I mean, this has all been released, from the 50s and the 60s of the United States government trying to build a flying saucer. It flew, but it didn't get really high off the ground and crashed more often than it stayed afloat. But, you know, back then they were attempting to build a flying saucer. And according to the videos that they have, you know, it never went that high, it never went that far, but did they continue the development of it? Did they eventually get one that did fly and move at supersonic speeds or anything along those lines? Did that program continue even though they said it had stopped? You know, anything along those lines is a possibility.
Yeah, and I think that was the popularity of the X-Files show. You know, you were watching it and you knew it was fiction, but at the same time, you couldn't help but think, I wonder just how much of this stuff is really going on, because you know in your gut some of it is, but is it really as deep as what they showed on the show and stuff like that? You know,
right? And they actually mention that in the UK press release. Right in the press release, it says the files revealed that in 1996, spike in UFO sightings, 609 that year, up from 117 the year before. David Clark, a UFO historian and consultant with the National Archives of the United Kingdom, said it was probably no coincidence that the supernatural TV show The X-Files was popular in Britain at the time, and that alien invasion movies such as Independence Day came out that same year. It's evident that some of these connections between newspaper stories, TV programs, and films about alien visitors, and the number of USA or UFO sightings, Clark said. Aside from 1996, one of the biggest years for UFO sightings reported from the Ministry of Defense over the past half century was in 1978. And do you remember what came out in 1978?
Oh, let's see, 78. I was only 16, so I wasn't really paying attention to TV.
but it was a movie, a great movie.
Star Wars is in 77.
77. That was Close Encounters of the Third Kind. It was released in 1978.
Okay.
And that was another year that was the second largest spike in the half century. Now, looking at both sides of the coin on this, I could say that as the skeptic, I could say people watched the movies and saw the TV show and have become impressionable to and jump to conclusions more quickly because of what they see. Not a reasonable doubt, you know, not too much of an unreasonable thing to say. As maybe the believer, and to fight for the side of the people who believe in the UFO and the ufology, is these movies just spikes their interest. And because of the movies, people just looked to the sky more and saw more because after seeing it, they had a bigger interest and looked more. I can see both arguments on this, and it's really tough to say. And I could say the same thing about ghost hunting now. There's such a large popularity in paranormal ghost hunting TV shows that more people are out creating groups, investigating, so we're finding more evidence, but maybe more people are seeing this stuff and getting more paranoid about their house being haunted and jumping to conclusions quicker after seeing the shows. It's tough to say.
Yeah, so let me play devil's advocate for a minute and say, okay, with the proliferation of digital cameras and cameras on cell phones and this and that and everything else, why aren't we seeing a lot more footage than we used to if they're there, you know, or are they just laying low, you know?
That's true. I'll take the argument of the believer here. You know, these are supernatural beings or beings from another solar system universe, they might be able to fool our 21st century digital camera. I don't know.
Yeah, with talking about cloaking devices and things, you know, getting back to Star Trek and stuff, if they have devices like that to bend light and things, then why wouldn't they be able to turn themselves invisible? You wouldn't be able to pick them up on film. I actually saw something on, I think it was Discovery Channel last week, is one of them like Star Trek gadget type shows, and the guy actually devised some little donut looking thing, and when he put it under a scope or something, you could see it, and in dead center in that thing, there was no light whatsoever shining in there. So he said whatever's in the dead center of this thing would essentially be invisible.
True. That's absolutely right. The government's developing fiber optic camouflage suits for soldiers that take the light that's on one side of the suit and projects it back on the other side so the soldier's completely invisible. Anything's possible. I think we're kind of skipping ahead. I think there have been more sightings. They come and go. I think UFO sightings, the nature of ufology is they do come in waves and in spurts. Recently, some of the big ones were probably one of the biggest mass sightings to date was the Phoenix Lights. Half of Phoenix saw a triangular shape floating over the city, And of course, the next day, the government, you know, is so quick to jump and say that they were just their flares that they light up with parachutes and float over a battlefield, and they were testing them out.
As soon as I saw that footage, that was the first thing that came into my mind, because I was in the Army, reserves for 6 years, active for two, and that's the first thing I said to myself is those look like flares, because they do. They fly over, they let them out, or they shoot them up in the air from a gun, and a little parachute comes out, and they just slowly float to the ground. And just the way those lights were, it's like one, then there was another one, right behind it a little higher, then another one right behind it a little higher, and the first thing I thought was they're dropping them out of a plane, and it looked just like flares to me.
Yeah, but it was 1997 the Phoenix lights happened, and they've repeated. I know there was a recent repeat of them, but the most popular was in 1997.
Now then, what was the one in Florida there, back around the 90s somewhere? Is Port something or Fort something? I can't remember. But and I know in Florida they had sightings for about a week straight or something.
You're kind of stumping me on that one.
I'll have to Google it and see. I remember seeing a show on it, hearing about it.
Now, I can't, and you can't really bring up the topic without talking about the most famous of all, the whole Roswell incident. And this here, you know, has been investigated by ufologists over and over and over again. They've been to the sites of these places. They try to get close to Area 51. And, you know, without any luck. I think probably the most kind of convincing evidence of that whole thing was simply that the newspapers the next day actually said the U.S. government claims to have recovered a flying saucer, only to recant it, you know, days later.
Okay, I just found it. Gulf Breeze, Florida is what I was thinking of. 1987. Over 200 witnesses saw strange, unexplained lights.
Which I find funny, too. With a lot of these cases, you almost always, especially with these mass sightings, you a lot of times will find some sort of law enforcement involved. And there's tons of these cases where you read them. You could pick through the internet all day and find these mass sightings. But there's always some sort of deputy sheriff or state trooper who's working the highway all on his own, out in the middle of nowhere, and sees this UFO, and they radio it in, and they follow it, and not pursue it, but, you know, stay behind it and follow it for miles and miles across the county. And, you know, are these guys lying, or are what they're seeing is, you know, is it something governmental, is it not? Some of these stories are just unbelievable. And I think some of the most amazing are the ones where they're close to the ground, and, you know, the people almost kind of interact with these vessels.
Yeah, I saw one on, I think it was History Channel, I can't find it right now, but I remember seeing it. It was like police officers in three or four different counties in Illinois, Indiana, were just reporting this thing all night long. It was just flying over slowly, going from one county to another. And, you know, the police officer would chase it to the county line, and then the next county officer would see it, and he'd follow it, and then it would go to the next county line and just keep on going. And it's like, that was pretty interesting to me, because I said, all right, you know, you might have one officer tipping a bottle or something in one county, but I mean, not that many all at one time, you know. And
yeah, maybe it was something in the water that day, you know.
And they actually, you know, they played the radio transcripts and stuff where these guys were calling it in and going, you know, I don't know what the heck I'm looking at, but this thing is weird, you know.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I agree with you 100%. I think, again, anybody who has an idea on this or their own theory, feel free to call in. Al, I'm pretty sure you got the number. I took it off my computer here. I don't have it right in front of me. Feel free to call in with you know, with your own input on the topic.
Phone number 646-716-5896. And yeah, give us your input. So Josh, what do you think? Do they come from other planets? Are they interdimensional travelers from alternate dimensions here on Earth? Where do UFOs come from?
Oh, you know, that was kind of the question I was going to ask you, Al. I'm really up in the air. That's a good question. And I've heard the debate for everything here. I personally feel that there is some sort of time dimension travel involved, I guess you could say. And the biggest argument for that that proves to me is sometimes your biggest mass UFO sightings happen at pivotal moments in history. If you look at the carvings of the hieroglyphics in the pyramids, there's UFOs, there's flying machines that actually kind of look like helicopters inside these hieroglyphics. You know, why are those there? And anything like this should be completely foreign to the Egyptians. I think another one is the plane that dropped the first atomic bomb on Hiroshima was said to have almost a UFO escort. The Apollo 11 mission, the astronauts reported seeing weird objects outside their capsule. All during World War II, which if you really think of World War II, a pivotal moment in world history. There were things known as Foo Fighters. And no, I'm not talking about, you know, the popular rock band now. They named themselves after these UFOs that were seen during World War II, and they were called Foo Fighters. And they were seen by both sides of the armies. The German pilot saw them along with the American pilots. The Germans just had a different name for them. And they were glowing orbs of light flying through the air along over the Atlantic. So, this is my two thoughts on it. If you were a time traveler of sorts, they could be us from 300, 400, 500 years from now. How do we know this isn't a school field trip, you know, for kids 1,000 years from now going back to witness world history of sorts? And, you know, maybe for whatever reason, they're not afraid of, you know, their ships being shown. Possibility, 1,000 years from now, we might have the ability to go back in time. I don't know. That's a whole other paranormal topic in itself. There's also,
yeah, we could do a whole show on Doctor Who.
Yeah. And then secondly, because it is our pivotal moments in history, maybe that is why alien life would be interested in visiting us at those specific times. I suppose if I was an alien race and I was monitoring us here on Earth, a relatively, I guess, young civilization, I suppose what times better to watch us was during our greatest war, during the time of, you know, when we harness nuclear electricity and the power of the atom, or when we first make landing on another celestial object. So I can see it from two points of view. It very well could, if I was a time traveler from 1,000 years, I would do that. I would go back and witness those moments. But, and I could even go into the whole theory of that, we were planted by extraterrestrials. We were nothing but a petri dish to them, and that you know, they're here to check on their experiment, and, you know, they're checking on us during these pivotal times. Now, and you'll always notice that during these big moments in history is when UFO accounts, especially from reputable people, go on the rise. Oh, do we lose you, Al?
Oh no!
There he is.
Turned off. I make sure I turn the mic off when you're talking because I never know what's going to happen in the background here, and sometimes I forget to turn it on. The case I was referring to in Illinois, I just found it on the internet. I put the link in the chat room. It's /cases/case277.htm, and they've got some pictures here of sketches from the police officers, what they saw, and then different pictures here. And it says here, this famous UFO case involved the sighting of a huge unidentified triangular-shaped UFO by police officers and others in the early morning hours of January 5th, 2000, over the state of Illinois. The officers from a number of small Illinois towns were able to track the unknown object and maintain radio contact with each other during the event. So this is kind of neat to look at some of these photos here. Did you happen to see, I think it was YouTube or someplace I stumbled on it, the supposed UFO that CNN caught in the background during the presidential inauguration?
I have not seen the video, but I have heard about it. I heard about it once, and I remember saying I want to see that, and I got distracted or something and never watched it. But again, here's another pivotal moment in civilization. You know, America elects its first African American president. I can absolutely see why. Here's another reason and another time for maybe our makers or our watchers to come in and check on us.
I sit here and I think I look back at like 92 when Ross Perot was running, and I remember what his ears looked like, and then I look at this one, and I look at the ears on this president, and it makes me wonder if maybe they've already started the hybrids between aliens and humans, you know, and then now they're running for president.
Yeah, you never know. I mean, some of these most obscure, and you know, we could talk about this for days and days. I mean, just like we've talked for days and days about ghost hunting, this is so many facets of this topic, and we're jumping all over the board here. Within just the ufology part, try and stick with us. It's such a big topic, but abductions in itself is a two-hour day right there of talking, and some of these are just flat-out horrifying stories that people, you know, encounter. They're horrifying encounters, and, you know, a lot of times they'll do hypnosis. And tell their story through hypnosis, and that's the worst, you know, 10 times worse than the worst nightmare I've ever had. Some of the stuff that's done, you know, especially a lot of times involving the sexual reproduction and tubes and cutting, and, you know, women going up and seeing a small child that's obviously a hybrid and being told it's, you know, it's their son or daughter, and you know, some of this stuff is just flat out horrifying.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it, they talk about the pain involved in sticking giant needles in their stomach and in their eyes and all kinds of weird stuff, you know. So I wouldn't think anyone would want to make up something like that.
No, absolutely not. Again, it's just, you know, like, they're horrifying incidents. And then, you know, there are some where people will say how they were treated well and treated peacefully. But, you know, maybe there's different races out there. No, I'm always, I'm pretty open. I look for ghosts. I believe in spirits. That'd be kind of silly of me to say there's no such thing as aliens. The best way to, and I know everybody really has an opinion on this, but I am a firm believer in the fact that there is definitely life beyond our solar system. There might even be life within our solar system. There's a lot out there we don't even remotely know about. But the best way to describe it, you know, you think about it, you look up at the sky at night. 95% of the stars you see are suns, just within our universe. And there's thousands that we don't see. You know, to think of all that being out there, and just our little needle in that giant haystack of solar systems, being the only one that's capable of supporting life, I think is just really kind of naive of us and narrow-sighted. Almost, you know, I could almost think it'd be self-centered, you know, to think that we're that special, that, you know, we wouldn't exist anywhere else in the gigantic scheme of everything that's out there.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. You know, how vain can you be to think that we're the only ones in the whole wide universe that's smart enough to go into space? I mean, get over yourself, you know?
You know, again, this topic is so broad. There's some guests I would love to get, but they are very high-powered guests, I guess you could say. I'd love to get on one guy who's particularly incredible on the whole, not so much UFO stuff, but, you know, when you expand this field out into extraterrestrial type of life and things like that, you know, there are theories out there. I mean, we can't see the dark side of the moon. There are people out there who firmly believe that the dark side of the moon that we don't ever see has bases on it. There are people, and his name is Richard C. Hoagland. He's a genius, a very smart man. He runs the EnterpriseMission.com. He was a commentator for the lunar landing, I think, for CBS or NBC. You know, he comes from a scientific background. And if you go to his webpage, EnterpriseMission.com, he's pulled pictures that off the NASA webpage from these lunar rovers that show boxes on Mars, pieces that look like rusted bolts or old structures, you know, on the surface of Mars. You know, was that once a living planet and something happened to it to wipe it, you know, wipe its atmosphere away and make it a barren desert? You know, there is water on that planet, but it's just frozen beneath the surface. That's been proven. They have found fossilized microbes. This has been found. So was there a larger civilization? To go back to our topic from a couple weeks ago, we had the gentleman from the Monroe Institute, and he was talking about remote viewing and stuff like that, and we only brushed on the topic of remote viewing quickly with him. People who remote view us claim to have remotely viewed the far side of the moon and seen dome-like structures. And I believe even some astronauts who have circled around that backside of the moon have reported seeing what almost look like old domes, like a dome-like structure that appears to be in decay and has been abandoned for a long period of time.
Yeah, I just stumbled on the video from the inauguration. I put the link in the chat room because it's a YouTube video. It's a little hard to announce here what the link is, but I'll try. It's youtube.com/watch?v=EF6 X 1 3, lowercase y, uppercase C, lowercase h, 1. And that shows the video. Now I've just found another one, which I'll post in there, which picks this video apart. And they have blown it up and looked at it, and they're pretty well convinced it's a bug.
Yeah, that goes right into, you know, some of our talking about ghost pictures in the paranormal. God, those, that bug and dust stuff, it kills us, don't it, even in their field. I know in ufology there's a phenomenon known as rods that shoot around in cameras and stuff like that. And, you know, those have been pretty much shown to be bugs that fly in front. But there's a lot of people who believe that these rods that they're capturing flying across, and actually one of the most popular cases is right here in our neck of the woods, was at Albany International Airport. And I remember seeing it on our local news here. And then eventually gained some national press, and, you know, it was tore apart. When you slow the footage down, it looks like a flying, like, I don't know, a flying rod, a flying cylinder, very small, making quick movements, you know, around. And what they're saying is it's almost like a dragonfly flying by in front of the camera at such a high speed. And because the camera's focused farther away, that it just appears to be something a little bit further away, making the sharp maneuvers and not really the bug that it is.
This guy thinks it's a bird, and it does seem that you can see wings flapping. But then at the same time, there's people here on the site who commented that bird's got to be flying at 200 miles an hour because it's going by so fast. And I can see their point, too. So there's one guy left a comment here. Maybe this makes sense. He says, okay, it was a bird, but it was an alien spying probe disguised as a bird.
There you go. You know, there's an answer for everything, I guess. It's an alien flying bird. And we have dog. Maybe, you know, that. And I'm still in awe of this from last week. You know, your friend's dogs there who manifest and turn into energy through the door, maybe they're not really dogs, and they're alien spy dogs that turn into energy and move through your door.
I don't know, but I talked to her again this week. She asked me if you had any words of wisdom for her, and I simply told her that you couldn't stop laughing long enough to give me any help. And she just kind of looked at me, and then and I told her, I said, get a camera and set it up and capture it. I said, and you will have the greatest paranormal footage that's ever been seen. So she was going to work on that, and then she had a medium on her show this week, and that I was very impressed with. So I got to get her on here. We'll have her on the show in September. So so her dogs are still doing it though.
You know, I find that odd, though, you know, that, you know, how come they're letting her put in mediums and stuff, but they want to take our show?
That, I think what that boils down to is some personal conflict between me and the programming committee on the board. I think it was personal with me. They had a policy in place for a little while, which was promptly shot down after about 30 days. But at the time that I proposed it, they had this policy in place that you must have a sponsor already in hand and all this stuff. And
yeah,
we got into
blah,
a big
blah,
argument.
Blah.
We got into a big argument over that. You know, I said if we're willing to produce the show and put it all together and host it and everything else for no charge, then your sales department can go out and get the sponsor. You know, we shouldn't need to do everything. They ultimately agreed with me and dropped the policy, but it was something personal between me and one of the members there. So if it comes down to it and we decide we don't like sitting here in our underwear in the living room and doing the show, and you actually want to go to the studio, I don't think we would have a problem doing that now if you wanted to do that. So.
Oh, I just found it odd, you know, like how we were getting shut down, yet they, you know, she's doing almost the same type of topics now on us. I was like, that's weird.
Well, she says I think it's a matter of them not really understanding what she's doing. She was teaching at a college, and she wanted to do a paranormal class on alternative healing and stuff like that, and they shot her down. So all she did was rename it to some politically correct name. How the heck did she say it? Something about alternative ways that of securing women's health or something like that. She gave it some fancy politically correct name, and it shot right through, no problem. She says, same class. I'm still teaching all the weird stuff that I planned on to begin with, but I had to change the name so the name of the class didn't sound weird, and then they approved it.
Well, that's what you got to do. I guess we don't have a weird enough name. We should just change it to flat-out Bipolar Paranormal Radio, and we'll be all good to go.
Exactly, yeah. If we put a psychological title to this thing instead of haunted, you know, if we have alternative explorations of
the mind and
the
matter.
Future, yeah, something, you know, and then oh, well, that sounds medical, you know, they must be doctors. Let's put them on the air.
You know, you say tomato, I say tomato. What are you going to do about it?
I'd still eat it. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
What's up with your two events you've got going on here? Anything new on them? You get any contracts in hand or anything yet?
Oh, you know, that's odd enough. I've come to accept the fact that this company isn't the fastest moving company around. I'm trying to get... I have the entire thing planned out and set to go, except for the fact that I can't sell the tickets yet. And that's pretty much what it boils down to. I just got to kind of wait for them to call me. The general manager had gone out of town, and you can't sign the contract until he's back in town. And that's what I'm waiting for, and hopefully they get moving fast because I've learned from experience that, you know, these things you need to get tickets sold, and people don't want to wait around to the last minute, and, you know, you got to get them sold, you got to be able to sell them. You know, I have people saying they want to go and they want to do it, but, you know, well, you got to wait to buy your tickets. Well, I hope they don't, you know, find something better to do that weekend beforehand, you know.
Well, that's it. You know, tell them, you know, we got to get this going. You know, if you don't want to do it, you tell them, well, we do have an alternative location where we can hold this, you know, if you want to change your mind or something, you know, and maybe give them a little push to do something. I mean, I could see everything you put together going on at the mansion just as well. I mean, you've got another location there that's maybe more haunted or just as haunted as where you're planning. So,
absolutely. And it'll all work out. I'm not too far off my deadline. I'm going to give them to mid this week and I'll pop back in with a phone call to them and see where we're at. But while I'm on the topic, this has become a kind of a small business for me. In my wake of unemployment, I'm always trying to find new ways to make money. And this is something I've always thought of doing anyways, even before I became unemployed. Any paranormal event, any paranormal investigators out there, any paranormal groups, anybody who runs a hotel or an inn or any location that's suitable for events that has a haunted history, or whether it doesn't have a haunted history and you think you'd want to jump on this wave of popularity that the paranormal has right now and try and make a few bucks, feel free to contact me at jmantelloevents @gmail.com. I can cater a program to any place for any price range. you know, and can bring in any number of lecturers, speakers. I can do scientific. I can bring in any number of psychics, mediums, witches, writers, authors, lecturers, web page runners, investigators, you name it. I can get that event together, you know, for you guys. And it, they make money, and they're widely popular, especially when you start coming up into these September, October, November months.
Yeah, I would think with your knowledge and your contacts and stuff that that you can put on a heck of a show for anybody that wants wants to take advantage of it. And you know, like you said, even if the place doesn't have a haunted history, I'm willing to bet with a little bit of research you could almost find haunted history in about any place if you looked hard enough.
You know, and there doesn't have to be haunted history to hold a paranormal event. Yeah, it's a matter of... It's an interesting topic, and people love it right now. People are highly into this and are willing to pay money to go see these real ghost hunters or investigators and hear their stories. It's very popular. And, you know, I do it here in North Adams. There's groups. I'm going to be speaking at the local Rotary Club, in a couple weeks. No, it's not a haunted thing. They just, it's just a topic of discussion for them for one day. That's all.
Yep. And like I've always said since day one, you don't need to go to a haunted house to investigate spirits. I mean, they're all around you at all times every day. So, you know, with a voice recorder, you can walk down the sidewalk and possibly get something, you know. So you don't necessarily need a haunted location. You don't need a place that people can investigate during the conference. All you need to do is give them a room big enough to go in and learn something, so then they can take that with them, go out and go to wherever they like and investigate, you know.
Right, and, you know, sometimes it's not about investigating. It's simple, you know, it's about learning or just hearing ghost stories. Some of my favorites that I've done were at just public libraries where I just spoke about all our past cases and stuff along those lines. And those were great nights, just sharing my stories of all our ghost hunts that we've done. And people get captivated by that, and they learn a little bit at the same time. Those are some of my favorite speaking engagements I've done.
Yeah, you know, stories about dogs with hair lips and stuff, and all kinds of things.
Or dogs that energize, walk through doors, and remanifest themselves on the other side.
Now, you be nice now.
Now, you know, I'm not, you gotta understand, you gotta let her know, well, I'm not laughing at her. I truly believe she feels, you know, there's something going on there. I'm laughing at what the pet psychic told her. And that is it. I've had a few encounters with a pet psychic or two, and they were crazy. That was it, they're crazy.
So, you don't want me to book one, or what?
You can book them, but I can't guarantee you if they start telling me about dogs unmaterializing and turning into energy and then rematerializing on the other side of the door, that I'm not going to bust out laughing. I can't make that guarantee.
You can't stop laughing now.
I can't. I'm sorry. And, you know, I wholeheartedly believe her that she feels there's something going on, and I will never laugh at a client's claims or any person's claims of paranormal activity in their house, but I will laugh at other people telling these clients ridiculous claims. I'm sorry.
You believe this load of crap?
No, I don't believe that load of crap. That's pretty much it.
Oh, man. Okay. So, how about your Halloween thing? You got anything more on that, or is that still up in the air, or what?
Unfortunately, I have not heard from Ron, so it is up in the air. Ron, I know Ron has Richard Felix from Most Haunted in down here in the States visiting us, so I haven't had the pleasure to talk to him lately. He's been pretty swamped doing his appearances with Richard Felix and getting ready to plug his book, so we shall see. Now
okay.
He's another person I just got a call, but now I'm working and training and gotta see if I can find the time for all this. Today was a
speaking
day for
of,
me.
Speaking of book, when's yours due out?
I believe it is September 7th.
All right. And that's all on paranormal photography?
Absolutely. Yes, it is. Well, if you go to the bookstore and look for a book written by Josh Mantello on paranormal photography, it won't be there. I do not have the pleasure of my name being on the cover. It will be in there credited, but that's about it. This book was my idea. It was pitched, to some publicists and publishers, and they pretty much didn't want me to write it, given the current economic situation and an unknown person who's never written a book before. They didn't want to put any money into it, so they asked somebody else to write it, and he agreed only with my permission. And he basically said, you supply X amount of words, I'll give you full credit for them. I just can't get your name on the cover. So we kind of split the book 50-50. He probably ended up writing about 60, 70 of it. But I did put in about 8,000 to 10,000 words, I think, and close to 100 pictures into it. And it's going to be part of the Picture Yourself series. If anybody out there listening to the is familiar with Picture Yourself Ghost Hunting, this is the sequel to it, written by Chris Belzano. And it's Picture Yourself Putting Spirits on Film, I believe. And that is coming out, I want to say, September 7th. Also, a week before, if you want, go and pick up Ron's book, Ghost Chronicles. That's going to be a really good book. That's going to have a few things about me and my group in the Houghton Mansion in there and all of other Ron's ghostly adventures with Maureen, which should be interesting.
All right, so we got all kinds of good stuff coming up. It's just nothing's definite yet, so we don't know.
We don't know what
to talk about.
Oh, we definitely got some stuff happening up in Manchester. That's gonna happen. You are going to get a chance to investigate with me, Ron, Michael Baker, and all the other members of New England Ghost Project and Berkshire Paranormal, and some other people I might be trying to pull in at time permits and if they're willing to do it. But that's going to happen November 6th and 7th. $100 to attend all day Saturday, $60 to be there on Friday, and $140 to be there on, did I say 140? Yeah, $140 to be there, for the whole weekend, and it's going to be an incredible time. Like I said, just email me at jmantelloevents@gmail.com for any information, and as the event gets closer, I'll put you on a mailing list and mail out to you all the information that you're going to need to buy your tickets.
Very good. I want to thank the people listening that were over visiting my website, the sendoutcardsofvermont.com, and kind of checking out the little business that I do from home. I've done a few gift accounts this week and let people send some free cards to their loved ones, and that's been pretty cool. Also, my other show, Bennington Rocks, I think we've come to the decision that September 12th is going to be the one-year anniversary for that show, and it's also going to be the final episode. We're going to shut that down because I've got ideas on two new shows that I want to devote my time to. One of them is, I don't want to call it an oldie show, but it's 50s and 60s music, but it's going to be portrayed from the standpoint of it being 1963. It's almost going to be like recreating a 1963 broadcast.
I was about to tell you, I hate to break it to you, but those are oldies.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to do it from the standpoint that they're brand new tunes just coming out. I've been archiving old commercials from the early 60s radio broadcast. I've been saving recordings of news from back then when President Kennedy was president and things like that. And so when the show starts, my goal is you'll be listening and you'll scratch your head and wonder what the heck this is, because for 3 hours I don't want to give away that you're in 2009. I want you to wonder what the heck you're listening to. So I got to get someone who wants to come in with me in the studio and do the news, be the news announcer, and read the live ads for the, go downtown and get your brand new 62 Studebaker Lark and stuff like that, And we're going to have a lot of fun with this, I think. If we could do it right and get the right sound effects, I got a guy who's going to create vintage 60s jingles. So the station call letters and the show and everything sound just like out of the 60s. He's going to do that for me for half price. It's only $1,500 for 10 of them. But he did give me a yearly payment plan to pay for it. So I'm working on that, and then I came up with an idea of old-time radio dramas, like The Shadow and Lights Out. And Inner Sanctum, or the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, which I'm a big fan of. I'm going to see if I can get a hold of a couple script writers and some actors that got some free time on their hands and maybe want to bring that back to do a live radio theater from our local AM station here. So those are a couple little projects I'm working on. I don't have time for the other show anymore, so we're moving on, hopefully.
Bigger and better things, as always.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I'm finding that I like to be a producer almost as much as I do a host, I come up with these ideas, and I like to work them out and get them into motion and see them come to life, and then when they do... I jump on to another project, that's what I like doing. So if there's any actors out there in the southern Vermont or northern Mass or eastern New York area that want to have some fun once a week, doing a little bit of acting on the radio, I guess what we need first is script writers. We need somebody that's able to write a three-act radio play and fit it within the time frame, so... That's the first thing we got to do, I guess.
All right. Well, I think we covered our commercial break.
Yeah, we did, but we can't come off commercial break without the bumper music, so we got to play that. Nickelback to break up a show, Part two.
Yeah, they do a pretty good job. Part two. Well,
the last three albums, and I have not found one bad song on there.
There's a few I don't like, but, I like their hard stuff. But when they get in and start getting into that sappy love song stuff, I kind of turn it off.
Boy. Now I can see why you're in the... Never mind.
I like my heavy metal and hard rock, and I'll stick to that. I don't need my band singing no ballads.
You're no romance. Hey, I got news for you. You look back at every hard rock band in history, and they never made it real big until they come out with the love ballad. I mean,
well, you know,
Kiss with Beth or Poison or any of them. You know, once they come out with that love ballad, then they hit it big.
Oh, that's just fine by me because that means I can continue to see my favorite bands for only $20 a ticket in clubs, opposed to spending $60 to $100 for them in arenas.
I'll bet you like it, but yeah, they'd like to be able to pay the help and make it worthwhile.
All right. Well, I spent a good chunk of my afternoon today listening to EVPs. It's a daunting task, especially when there aren't any there. And listening to yourself ask questions to nothing, apparently, because, well, nothing was answering me. On the first couple, things got more interesting as the night went on with my sessions, but I was really discouraged after my first two sessions that I played back, and I said, oh, God, I already have 15 minutes of dead paranormal air here. I can't wait to hear the next 40 minutes I still have to go and of dead air. So I was getting pretty nervous, but things kind of turned around on me as I went on. And like I was saying earlier, we've talked about EVP, but I don't think we've ever really in-depthly discussed it. The concept, where it started, how it started, where it's going, how to do it, and along those lines. And I'm surprised that we haven't, because it is like your favorite topic of the paranormal.
It's probably because it's the only one I know even a little bit about.
It is a very, it's the easiest to get into, I would have to say. You start talking about EMS and camera, you could buy a digital recorder at Walmart for like $30, and that's going to serve you just fine for your purpose of doing EVP. I mean, if you want, you can go out and you can spend $200 on a recorder and another $500 on audio editing software and another couple hundred on gold beryllium high quartz, super efficient mics, or you can do what Michael Baker's doing with Soundwave. The options on it are unlimited as to what you can do with it and where you can go. But when it really boils down to the fact that it's the easiest and most simplest form of investigating right now, and I think it's probably the most reliable and undebunkable that you can really get.
Okay, that made me think of Sarah Estep, who used to simply sit twice a day in her office, 10-minute sessions with a voice recorder going. This was 20 years ago, so I think she started out with reel-to-reel. And here's one of our first bipolar moments today. While I'm thinking of it, I need to borrow a reel-to-reel player that will handle 10-inch reels if anybody's in the area and got one, because I need to go through some old-time radio broadcasts that are on 10-inch reels and I got nothing to play them on. Okay, that's the end of that bipolar.
What's a 10-inch reel?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
is that like a record player?
It's almost as big. I got a reel-to-reel player there, but it only handles 7-inch reels. So, I'm either going to have to come up with a 10-inch reel-to-reel player or take these 10-inch ones and transfer them over onto 7-inch reels so then I can listen to them. So, but yeah, that's what Sarah used to do, is simply get up in the morning, sit, go in her office, turn on a recorder, talk for 10 minutes. Then at night she'd do the same thing, and she says, after doing that for like 6 months, spirits 14, and they knew, and they would tell her that they're there, standing by her desk, waiting for her in the morning, so they can talk to her. They were anxious to talk to her. They knew they could trust her, and they knew she would be there. And she wrote a whole book on this called, Voices of Eternity, I think it was. I forgot now, but I think that's it. And she never went anywhere. She just sat in her office and learned unbelievable stuff about life on the other side without ever leaving her home, you know. She had a home office.
I guess one of the first things I got to say about EVP is don't ever get discouraged. It is a, even though it's probably the simplest thing to do, just money-wise, equipment-wise, it is the simplest form of investigating we can do. But I have to say that I had horrible luck to start. I do think there is a substantial learning curve when starting to work with EVP that most people kind of overlook and don't really take into account. You have to train your ear. You really do have to train your ear to hear and understand what these spirits are saying and know when to start listening for them. I don't think people really understand that completely. There is a way to do it. And everybody's different. But let me kind of, I guess, back up a hair on all this. And say EVP has been around for a while. And Thomas Edison attempted EVP. He was very big into spirit communication. And even before he died, you know, he was trying to invent the Edison Spiritcom box, and didn't really, he had claimed to capture voices from the dead via this Spiritcom box, and now, you know, it's the Thomas Edison box, anything along, Einstein had devices, so this is something that's been around from the very beginning of, you know, beginning of some of the modern science. Basically, what the thought is on how these are being made or imprinted is spirits are energy and always have been, kind of always will be type of thing. And how it started with these, like you said, with the reel-to-reels, and now, back then, it was, you know, the very large reel-to-reels, and onto cassette tapes, and now digital recorders. But I think what it is spirits are energy. And what these use to capture your voice, your actual human voice, is the microphone imprints magnetic energy onto the tape and then records onto the tape, and it can be erased and recorded back over and played back. What's happening supposedly with spirits being energy, and Michael Baker, when he was on the show about a month back, had even mentioned this, is that the spirits might be emitting some sort of wave of their energy. And with that wave of energy, they're also imprinting a voice or sound onto the magnetic tape. So, in essence, that is what an EVP is that disembodied voice of them most likely somehow, you know, through magnetic EMF, somehow, you know, imprinting through the magnetic device of the tape onto the recorder, which you can then play back and hear.
Yeah, and then it comes to back to, okay, are you actually picking it up through the air? Are they just imprinting it directly onto the recorder? So many different things we don't know. But Michael proved that he can actually send a sound through the air and you can't hear it, but yet he can get it on a recorder. But I think he said it took so much power that it wouldn't just happen by accident. So pretty much anything you catch, you can pretty much rest assured that's what it is. It isn't somebody screwing with you.
Right, yeah, and I that's really what he pretty much boiled down to in what he said. You know, it would take a massive amount of power. So talking like what he just mentioned, you know, EVP, the main skeptical thought on it is that you're not actually capturing spirit voice, and you're in actuality capturing stray radio waves from nearby transmitters onto your recording device, and not dead Uncle Fred.
Right, and I pretty much blew that theory out of the water, too, when I went to field day with that little test I did a few weeks back. I was standing right next to 100-watt transmitters, and absolutely nothing was being imprinted on the recorder. So I think, you know, whatever's getting there is getting there in a way we don't understand.
Right. So now you know what an EVP is. We remotely know how it started. And we know, you know, what the skeptics say it is. But how do you get started? Where do you begin when we're talking about EVP and, you know, in your ghost hunts? And that's what that's going to be your thing. I'm going to be a ghost hunter, and I'm going to be the EVP tech for my ghost hunting group. You know, how do you get started? I recommend not going just to Walmart and getting the cheap version. I had one of those. It broke. The casing fell apart. Kind of your typical kind of stuff you buy from Walmart when it comes to electronics, I guess. Take, you know, a little bit of extra money and pony up and get something of a little bit higher quality. Not so much higher quality when it comes to memory. You can buy one now that'll record for 20 hours for a reasonable price. 20 hours is a long time. You're not going to be recording 20 hours for an investigation. So I don't think, you know, don't go looking for the recorder that's going to have, you know, 120, 300 hours worth of recording time. Because I pity you if you're going to have to actually fill that recorder and then have to sit back and listen to all those tapes and all that recording, because I know I won't. The other thing is try and actually go out and buy an external microphone. It's not a bad thing to have. When you start out and you're looking, you can go to Radio Shack. Sometimes Walmart will carry them, or Staples. A microphone that you can plug into your recording device. This is because a lot of times you'll like to carry around your recorder while you're recording. And if it has a plastic casing, and while you're carrying it around, your hands are moving around on it, and you end up making a lot of noise on the recorder from simply moving it around in your hand, where if you had the recorder like in your pocket and were walking around with a microphone, it'd be much more efficient. Now,
I found that out my night down there at the Holton Mansion. You know, it picked up great. It was almost too sensitive. But yeah, like you said, any little movement like that, because I did have it in my pocket at one point, just letting it record, and every time I walked, you could hear, you know, the pants rubbing against the recorder and all kinds of stuff. So I actually had to take it out and hold it out in front of me in my hand anyway. So it would have been easier with an external microphone.
And even then, you know, you could still, you know, if you take it out when you're just holding it and moving it around in your hand, it's like a whoosh, whoosh, whoosh noise, just moving it with your hand. Now, and you can continue to move on and go forward and say you want to not just have your run-of-the-mill type of, your run-of-the-mill recorder, and you want to have the top of the line. I don't have the top of the line, but these are what you should have. I'm sure eventually I'll invest in it once I start making some money again, but they recommend now that you don't use a omnidirectional microphone, and you use a stereo microphone or a multi-directional microphone. And I have seen this actually happen, and people thinking they've captured EVPs when they really haven't. With an omnidirectional or one-directional microphone, basically, wherever you're pointing that microphone, and the internally built microphone within your handset is single directional. If I'm pointing it towards the middle of a room or a corner of a room, and I'm asking my questions, I'm going to hear me okay because I'm right on top of it. Now, if I was, say, interviewing somebody and they were right in front of me, or within a reasonable proximity in front of me, they also would come in clear. And if you're into EVP and you want to try this out, go ahead. Now, anybody standing behind you isn't going to sound right. It's not the direction the microphone is made to pick up in. It's meant to pick up in front of it. So, as you're listening to you're listening to the playback and you're asking your ghost questions and somebody else is with you, and they're whispering or even softly talking from behind you, and not the direction that the microphone is pointed in, they are going to sound just like an EVP. That's why it's important, A, to tell everybody to be quiet and not to be talking while you're recording. B, if you can afford it, you know, try and get a multi-directional microphone. They run a little bit higher than others, but they're worth it. And if somebody does talk, a big thing you can always do, and you should do when you're recording EVPs during your session, is tag things. If something happens, say, something just happened. If you're doing a recording session and somebody just came up the stairs, you know, you're upstairs and everybody else is investigating downstairs, and someone just came up the stairs and says, "Hey, are you up here?" Just say, "So-and-so just came up the stairs and said, hey, are you up here?" It could be a week before you listen back to that recording, and if they weren't within that range of the microphone, they might actually just sound like, "Hey, are you up here?" A real weird whisper. And next thing you know, that's your EVP because you didn't mark it. So if somebody comes up and say, "Hey, somebody just came up and said that," or "I just bumped the wall and it banged," or "I sneezed," anything, tag your EVPs as they happen.
That makes sense. Like you said, when you've got so many hours of stuff to go through, and your regular life gets in your way, yeah, you know, it might be a week before you get back to it, and the older you get, the less you can remember what went on. So I can see where that would be important.
Yeah, it is. And I think a lot of people have gone away from it, and it's tough to remember. It's tough to remember to do sometimes. You don't really think about it.
I see now they've got some quad microphone recorders out there. It's actually got four microphones, one on each corner. And I've heard good and bad things about them. You know, okay, it'll pick it up and it'll show you which direction it came from. But then I also heard some bad things about them. I can't remember what they were right at the moment, but I know there was a downside to that as well.
Yeah, I know anything where you're getting multi-direction, I'd be more apt to have than something where it's not multi-directional.
Yeah, I can see where it would make sense. It gives you more of a pinpoint of what's going on, and then you can think, well, you know, if you review it while you're still there, so you know, say, okay, it came from that direction, okay, so-and-so was standing over there, so it must be them. But I would almost think, like you said, a week later, if you didn't tag it correctly, you'd still be in the same boat, only more confused now, because only one microphone picked it up, but the other three didn't, and they're only an inch away from each other, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, excuse me. Coming down with something.
Oh, don't you send it through the phone.
Yeah, I know. That'd be, well, I could turn it into energy and send it over the phone line and it could rematerialize the virus on the other side.
I was gonna say, don't you manifest it under my door.
I would have fun with this for weeks, you know that.
It's freaking hilarious. I can do that. Is it professional? No.
You're right. I'm sorry.
The fun never stops on Haunted America Radio.
I know. So speaking of EVPs, did you ever go through the ones I sent you? Is there anything there or isn't there?
Oh, no. There's stuff there. I just haven't sent them to you. There's definitely stuff there.
Great. So there's stuff there to get me excited, but you're just holding it on to it, hogging it for yourself. Thanks a lot.
Oh, anytime. You know, that's what we're here for. there's stuff there. I've just been working on all these other EVPs now, and the job never ends. It never does. I'm already days behind schedule on this investigation because. I don't know, I'm just getting too lazy in my old age, I guess.
You got to hire a secretary, that's all. Let me know next time you're going to be down there playing. I'd like to come down again and refine my techniques a little more. I learned a lot last time on what to do, what not to do. So I think this time I want to bring a couple of recorders and tag team them. You know, record on one and record on the other while I'm playing back the other one and see if I can
catch
these things in almost real time so I can get a conversation going.
And that's really a good idea. And then kind of our next step, you know, if we go in progression here about what we were talking about is, you know, you got your recorder, you picked it out, Kmart brand, Staples brand, you know, $200 multi-directional one or not. Where do you go and how do you use it? Like you said earlier, you know, conceivably spirits are all around us all the time and they might want to communicate with us. I have learned, or I have experienced over the years, that the spirits need to learn how to use the machines just as much as we have to learn to use the machines. At least that's what I feel. I have found that I have better luck capturing EVPs on return visits than I do on my first. And that very well might be that, you know, these spirits might actually have to learn how to communicate this way. It's a new modern device. They're a 200-year-old spirit and don't know how to communicate. So we got to teach them, you know, and tell them. Talk into the light. Gather up your energy. Dispel it into the light or into this box that I have, you know, whatever you want to call it. So go anywhere, you know, obviously it'd be better to go to a highly active haunted location. And this is, at least for me, is where it got difficult. Stand out and talk to yourself. Ask questions to the air. And for me, that was kind of the hardest hump to get over, is actually talking to nobody, or pretending to be talking to somebody, thinking they might be there, and not knowing if they're answering you, but continuing to hold on to conversation. Yeah, it's best to ask questions that may be relevant to your haunting if you have some sort of history behind it. If you know, like, who the past owners used to be, you can ask them, are you so-and-so? Are you John Smith? Are you his wife? You know, did you die here? And just ask what you want to know. You know, what do you want to know from the spirit? And see if it'll tell you. You can do like you said, and play back and listen and see if you're getting your responses while you're recording again. That's all really well. A lot of times you won't hear your responses right away on your recorder. You have to go back now and try and analyze your EVPs. This becomes another kind of a long task. I like to keep each session, as I call it, recording sessions, lately they've been about 8 minutes. I try to go no longer than 10. I used to keep them around 6, but now they seem to be getting slowly longer. And that goes by real fast when you're asking the questions, you're in the middle of an investigation. But when it comes time to sit down and listen to them all, it does get long and your ears get tired. Now there's a few different.
Not to mention what Steve on Ghost Hunters said. You know, that they were worried about.
Got a long time to go, so hope we don't get hemorrhoids.
Are you really concerned about that?
I don't know about that, but I suppose you're sitting long enough, it happens.
No, the reason I mentioned the tag team and the recorders is the psychic told me that a lot of times if they don't want to be heard, they won't say anything. But once they think you've turned the recorder off and you can't hear them anymore, she's caught spirits chatting back and forth with each other, talking when they think they're not being recorded. So you almost need to fool them into thinking, okay, I turned the recorder off, and not letting them know you got the next one on already, you know. And
right.
And when you said asking questions, are you so-and-so and all this, I try to not ask leading questions. Are you so-and-so? You know, because yes is a pretty common word in society. You know, someone off in the next room could be talking about something and then say yes, you know, and you'd think, oh, I caught an EVP, I got an answer. You know, where you ask instead of are you so-and-so, you know, what is your name and something like that, you know. Let them give you the answer instead of leading them, you know, because like the name Fritz or something, you know, is going to be a lot less commonly said than the word yes. And just a little something that I try to think about when I'm doing it.
Oh, yeah, that's actually a very good way to look at it. Try not to do leading questions or questions that are going to result in a very commonly used word. Oh, excuse me again. So, you know, you get them back and you're on your computer. You don't really know what to do with them next. Or actually, you got them on your recorder, your investigation's done. Where do you go from there? Sure, you can just plug headphones into your recorder and listen and get EVPs right there. And yeah, it's still an EVP, but you really can't do a whole lot with it just on your recorder. You can't email it to your buddy and say, hey, listen to what I found. You can't send it off to a client to let them have. You have to get it into a digital format somehow, where it can be put onto a CD or onto your web page so you can show it off to all your friends and let them all know that you're able to capture EVPs like everybody else. Now, there's a couple ways of doing this. Kind of like when I went back and I said earlier about getting the different price levels of voice recorders. A lot of voice recorders now do come with USB outputs on them, where you can plug your recorder directly into your computer, and depending on the version, it has software that's in it or software you can download, and you can put your recordings right onto your hard drive, and some of them actually will come with a remedial audio editing software that will allow you to clip it at least and save it as an MPEG or an MP3 or WAV file, whatever your pleasure is. And for your really good EVPs, you really shouldn't need much more than that. All you really should have to do is clip it and save it. The more you play with it, the less quality of an EVP it really is, and the more stupid you're going to, I guess, look, thinking that every little strange whisper on your recorder is an EVP when it really isn't. So you need to kind of not screw around with your EVPs so much and just let them be what they are. Don't manipulate them into something they're not.
Yep. I went searching for recorders. I found what I wound up buying is the Olympus VN5200 PC. It holds about 34 hours of recording, more than you'd ever want. It has an external microphone and headphone jack. It has a USB port, and when you plug it in, it looks just like a flash drive, like a external drive. It has five separate folders inside it, so you can organize your files. And it was only about $50. I got two of them for $100, so I can't beat that. And personally, I like to have two, because like I said, I like to lay one down, record, then pick it up, lay the second one down, and let that record while I'm listening to the first, and just keep rotating them like that. And I know Audacity is a software editing program, which I believe is free. I use Adobe Audition. I don't know what you use, Josh, but that's what I'm used to using at the radio station and stuff.
Right. I use Audacity is a great program, and it really does everything you really kind of need for your beginner and intermediate EVP editing, clipping, and all that. It has the ability to filter. It has the ability to slow down, speed up, noise reduction, and stuff like that. So it really is good, and you can clip and it'll let you export as a WAV file. Adobe Audition's really good. It'll cost you. There's a Cool Edit, which is a beta version of Audition, which is really good. I use Adobe Sound Booth, which is just like Audition, but it's a little bit more powerful and has the ability to actually multi-track and stuff like that. If you were to have like a rock band and wanted to track music, you know, with lyrics and drum, guitar, it actually has like a sound booth purpose. But it also has the same editing tools where I can do noise reduction, clips, and all that happy stuff too with it. So you get it into your computer, and if you say, all right, I got to take a step back. You know, say you weren't able to pick up a device that has a USB port, and you still want to get it onto your computer somehow. It's not that difficult of a process. It takes a few tries, but you'll be able to get it. You got to pick up a double eighth inch jack recorder. Basically, it's a double male-ended eighth-inch jack where it has the plugs on both ends. One to go into your earphone on your voice recorder and one to go into your microphone port or line in spot on your computer. And from there, you should be able to open up your whatever you have for an audio editing software. Hit record or select it to record off the line in or microphone. Press play on your recorder with the volume turned up and hit record on your audio software. And then you actually have to let the entire session play out. And you can either probably try and listen to it and play out while it's, or listen to it and try and look for EVPs while it's playing out. You just got to remember not to pause anything or rewind. Just let it play in its entirety before you, because it's recording. And then you have it saved onto your file to do whatever you wish with it. And I did that for years with my first recorder. I just had to put it all in, play it, record it, and then listen to it all over again. I used to have, relive it three times to really do it. So now that you've got
to miss anything.
Yeah, exactly. So now that you got it on your computer, I like to look at it in the spectrum format and not the wave format, but some softwares don't have that ability. You pull it up and you have the big wave format, and or if you're using CoolEdit or Audition or SoundBooth, you can look at it in the spectral form. And you've got to just listen. Get yourself a nice, good quality set of earphones that you can have comfortably on your head for a while. Get yourself in a quiet room. Get the kids out. Get the wife out. Do whatever you need to do. Shut the TV off and sit down and get ready for just listening to quiet. And you're going to learn that there's a lot more noise in that digital recorder than you thought. And it's funny. I have two digital recorders. If I were to just take each one and press record and have it be blank silence, I could actually listen to the blank silence from the two different recorders and tell you which one it was from. For just nothing. There's no moving parts in there, yet just a digital chip recording, there's still a lot of background noise. And you will actually learn the background noise of your recorder. And you got to sit there. You hear your question, now listen for an answer. Listen intently and quietly. This is why I said don't do 30-minute sessions, because you're going to be doing it for 30 minutes. Watch the wave for any waves that or spectrum that don't seem to fit to a voice. And listen to that background noise. There's hisses, there's clicks, there's pops, there's noises in there. Listen for those. A trick that was taught to me from somebody who was a pretty high up member in the AAEVP told me that when the spirit starts getting into your machine and starts getting into your voice recorder, that the hissing and the pops and the clicks will actually start to increase. So start listening for those clicks and the pops. And when you start hearing those, start listening for the voice. Now, I personally don't like to stop my recording for anything. So while I'm doing this, I'm sitting down with a pen and a piece of paper. And if I hear something that I feel may be an EVP, not something that I definitely feel, it's something that just might be something paranormal in the recording, some sort of disembodied voice or whatever, I just look up, I see what time it is, I jot down on my notepad, 1:52. That's it. And continue to listen. 30 seconds later, I might hear something else. 1:22. And just jot down the times of interest as I'm going on. And then, when I'm done listening to that entire session, will I go back to each of those times and now listen even more intently and more in depth than I did the first time? That's where I'll clip it. I'll pull it up in its own little file, or I'll keep it in the clip. I'll put the clip on repeat and listen to it over and over again. I'll maybe do a high-end and low-end filter on it, which basically just makes it so it gets rid of the high-end sounds and the low, like rumbly clicking sounds. Try and get the voice out of it. And if it's an EVP, I will then undo any of the filters I've done. Very important. And I think not enough people do this, and I think everybody should do it. It's very important. Always keep your original files original. Someone's going to accuse you someday of tampering. Someone someday is going to accuse you of making it up. Don't give them fuel for their fire. Always keep your original file original. Always keep that original 9-minute thing, 9-minute session that you've dumped off your recorder onto your hard drive just as it was. Don't edit it. Don't enhance anything. Don't amplify it. Leave it just the way it is. So now that I've undone everything I just did to it, then I will highlight it again, clip it out, save that clip to its own file. Then I can mess with it and save it and try and clear it up so that it sounds, I can make out what the voice is saying a little bit more clearly. But if I'm ever questioned about what it is or if I did something to it to manipulate it to say that, I can always go right back to the very original file and say, no, here it is, it's still there.
That makes a lot of sense. Sometimes I forget to do that. Once I get the part I'm excited about, and I copy that to a new file, and then I forget, and I wind up tossing the original one, and who knows what I might have missed. You know, someone else might hear something I didn't.
All right, and sometimes I'll do that. If I'm bored, I'll go back to a case from couple years ago and just throw in a single session and just listen to it, and look, maybe I did miss something, and you know, and it's happened to me. Hey, guess what, you know, I missed this 2 years ago. Listen, and it actually I can think of an exact time that it happened. I was doing an EVP session on an investigation, and this investigation was getting really active, and we were asking a series of questions. And the recorders were just going. We weren't really doing it for the purpose of capturing EVP. We were doing it more like with the K2s and asking questions and getting answers over the K2s and our cell sensors and our ELF meters, and everything was going off whenever we asked the questions. And I then noted we had our investigator was sitting like at a chair with a table in front of him with his meter sitting in front of him, and the meter went flying off the shelf or off this desk that was in front of him, flying off on its own and landed and crashed. And we didn't get it on video, but it's all on audio, and you can hear it slide, you can hear it go flying, you can't hear it go flying. You can hear it, you know, slid off, crash to the ground. You can hear him saying, "Whoa, I didn't do that. That just went off on its own." And another investigator going, "Holy shit." And, you know, things were getting active. So when I first listened to it, I was just so excited that we captured the event on audio. And I cleaned it up and edited it so he could hear, you know, everybody's swear words and reactions to it more clearly, because I was actually on the top of a staircase when it happened, that I didn't really listen any more in depthly for anything else. And then a couple years later, I'm just listening to it again, and sure enough, there was a voice. It went flying, and there was a voice at the same time.
Well, there's a good reason not to throw things away, that's for sure. And that's another thing, is when you spend an hour or two reviewing these things, you know, now it's time to take a step back and take a break, you know, take a break often, because you can get tired and miss things. So don't be sitting there just listening for so long that you wear yourself out, you know. Do it in short sessions, and then take a break, and then go back to it and take another break.
Oops, sorry about that. I accidentally put my phone on mute. All right. Yeah, absolutely. Got to take breaks. And that's why I'm a big advocate of not doing one-hour-long EVP sessions. Because you pause it, you lose interest in it, you might miss something, you don't go back to the same spot where you left off. You're bound to be distracted at some point over the course of an hour. Now, do 10 minutes. Take a 5-minute break.
I'm undecided there because I wonder. Something tells me, okay, no, I have it on for 10 minutes and then I turn it off. How do I know I'm not missing something? You know, so to me, I like letting it go a long time, and just in case, that way I don't catch nothing. But that doesn't mean I need to sit down and listen to the whole thing at one time, you know?
Well, there's nothing to say. You can't shut it off. Do 10 minutes. Shut it off. Turn it right back on and start recording again. This isn't so much to do with the actual time investigating and doing the session. You could do one 10-minute session after another for 40 minutes, and you have 40 minutes worth of recording. It has more to do with the playback. And actually saying, okay, this 10 minutes is up, it's time to take a break. Take a break from listening. Not so much take a break from recording.
Okay. Because I'm just afraid if I turn it off and, you know, that minute in between until I turn it back on again, what did I miss? You know, it's always in the back of my mind, oh, I might be missing something.
Oh, no, you could turn it off for only for 5 seconds. Hit stop, then hit record again and re-tag it. Kind of forgot to mention that. You know, files get lost. Things get mixed up sometimes. And it happens to me. You just turn it on and here you are asking ghosts questions. Where were you? What room are you in? What day was it? You start out your EVP session. This is Josh. It is August 23rd, 2009. Investigating location A, B, in the cellar at 9 o'clock at night. Take the time to do that. Even if you don't have to put the date and who you are, if you're the only person investigating, okay, you don't need to say your name. But you need to say at least where you are in the location in the time of the the time during the investigation. I am in the living room 10 o'clock at night. Now recording in the attic 11:30 at night. Now recording in the basement at midnight. So you kind of can skip the progression of the night and where you, and at least know where you were. How silly will you look if you go to your client and say, look at these, I captured 5 EVPs. Really? Where? I don't know. In your house. You know, it'd be helpful to say, actually, I captured this in your living room at about 10:30. And you all remember right around that same time, that same night, we had this going on, or this was happening. You could start collaborating more things if you properly tagged it.
Yep, I can see where that would be an important thing, and I did some of that the other night when I was doing it, but I don't think I did the time. I did mention what room I was in. Of course, being my first session, I'm not going to get it mixed up with anything else. But
right.
I didn't date it or time it, which I probably should have. And you should probably mention who else is in the room with you if you've got someone with you. That way, if you happen to pick up anything
Absolutely.
Like that, any voices.
You always should. You always should, you know, mention everything. Anything that may not seem relevant at the time you're recording, but might mean the world when you're done recording.
Yeah, it's temperature is this out, the windows are open, the air conditioner's running, or any of that stuff probably that you could make note of would make sense later on. So,
all right.
Okay, we got about 5 minutes left here.
Oh,
you want to review all these upcoming things that you can't sell tickets for, or?
All right. Yeah, I will. I'll give a quick shout out. Wow, I use the word shout out. I'll give a quick plug. November 6th and 7th at the Equinox Resort and Hotel in Manchester, Vermont. I will be hosting and putting together a haunted ghost hunt or haunted weekend and ghost hunt at the Equinox, a storied haunting of Vermont, said to be haunted by Abraham Lincoln and his family, amongst other spirits. It's been a very well-documented haunting. I have a very good selection of guests speakers and lecturers and authors and presenters for the entire weekend. Should be well worth it. Keep listening to this show for details. Email me at jmantelloevents@gmail.com, and we'll forward off anything to you. As of right now, I'll be speaking. Ron Kolick of the New England Ghost Project will be speaking. Michael J. Baker will be speaking, and Joseph Citro will be speaking. Along with each night, you will be able to have 4 hours of free time to wander around this lovely, haunted, five-star resort freely from 10 o'clock at night till 2 o'clock in the morning and look for the spirits of the Lincoln family for yourself. Keep in touch. There's really little details on this now, but we will be trying to get something together at the Houghton Mansion for Halloween night, possibly with, I forgot his name, he is a cast member or past cast member of the show Most Haunted. I really can't remember right now, but we will be doing something with him probably on Halloween night.
All right. Sounds like going to be really interesting. Our guest we were supposed to have today, the Reverend Steve Wilson, any idea when you're going to reschedule him?
I got to get in touch with him. I know he pretty much got called away to an investigation, and the types of investigations they do, they really sometimes get called away at the spur of the moment, and I think this year was something he didn't really want to pass up on. It was a haunted castle in Newport, Rhode Island, so I think I would even maybe give this show a pass for a day to investigate a haunted castle in Newport. So
I was going to say, I'd blow you off in a heartbeat for that.
So that's what he ended up doing. He said he'll get in touch with me this week, and I got, you know, hopefully he's able to help us out and get on the show. The guy's amazing. He really is. Everybody who's listened to the show more than once knows my outlook and opinion on psychics and their claimed abilities, and this guy is legit and really good at what he does. And even with me, you know, he knew I was going through a bad spell and a bad time, and take it for what it's worth. He goes, well, I'll put a word out on the streets, and basically, he's going to put some prayers out into the spirit world for me. And a week later, I had a job. So, I don't know. Could be coincidence, could not be. I don't know, but things for me are turning around, so you never know. The guy is just very smart, very good at what he does. I could tell a few great stories of how he's proved himself to me about his psychic abilities.
I got kicked off as host, so I had to call back in as a regular caller. So,
that's their way of saying get off the air.
Yeah, all of a sudden I got a busy signal. I tried to call back in and I still get a busy signal. So it's just not even letting me call in. So I don't know what's going on, but hopefully I'll be able to fire the exit music here. So anyways, coming up in September, we got John Corkum, who does a paranormal television short show, is also the lead ghost investigator liaison for the Monroe Institute. Going to be coming up in September. I believe we're going to have a medium and psychic Kelly Ballard from Clifton Park is going to be on the show. I got to get in touch with her. So I guess that's it for this week, Josh.
All right. I can't wait till next week. Hopefully I'm feeling better.
All right. Well, we'll see everybody later, and be sure to tune in next week, Sunday, 7 o'clock, HauntedAmericaRadio.com.